This is Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. I'm sitting in today for Jim Meester. We'll be talking about Louisiana's image. How does the rest of the country see us? And has the recent behavior of some of our politicians been a setback for the state? You can call in and share your thoughts on that subject. Well, joining us are two newspaper columnists following state and local issues for The Advocate, Lanny Keller and Stephanie Grace. We'll also take a look at Louisiana's image from the standpoint of economic and business development. And we'll hear from outside the state, Mark Arend, with an Atlanta-based publication that tracks industrial expansions across the country, will offer his view of whether Louisiana is a desirable place to do business. And Ian Vasey with the Baton Rouge Chamber will be joining us. Call in with what you've heard about Louisiana's image today on the Jim Meester Show. First, the news. Welcome to the Jim Meester Show. This is Robert Travis Scott, the president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. I'm the guest host today. Jim will be back soon. Today's topic is Louisiana's image. How are we looking these days to the rest of the country and the world? You can join the conversation in the Baton Rouge area. Dial 297-5633. That's 225-297-5633. Or you can dial toll-free at 877-217-5757. Now, later on in the show, we're going to focus on Louisiana's image for economic development, and we'll hear from the editor of Site Selection magazine based in Atlanta and from the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. But first, here in the studio is Lanny Keller, one of the editorial writers for The Advocate. Good morning, Lanny.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And we also have Stephanie Grace, a regular columnist for The Advocate, who's writing on a range of issues, especially politics. And thank you for joining us, Stephanie. Hello.
Hi.
Good. Well, I want to start off with you, Lanny. You've been covering politics in Louisiana for many years. I won't say how many years.
It's just old age. That's all.
In fact, you've even had your foot in politics. So you've been a press aide to former Governor David Treen. You worked a little bit for Mr. Livingston.
Yes, but that was a long time ago.
All right, but I've
cleansed of my association with politics.
Okay, but still, you've seen a lot over the years. And how has Louisiana's image changed over the years, or has it changed?
Well, you know, when you talk about image, you're talking about something that is inherently not very quantifiable, and it's also something that is of course driven by our own self-importance. We think that we are all of us think we are at the center of the universe, and we tend to imagine that people in Minnesota wake up every day worrying about the ethical climate of down in Louisiana. Obviously, real life doesn't work that way, but certainly image is something that we have always wrestled with in Louisiana one way or another.
We struggled with it, I would say, but it's not just what our image is for people who aren't really interested maybe in one day moving to Louisiana or moving a business here, but for people who might want to consider Louisiana on their list of places to live, I mean, then the image matters, right?
Certainly, it would matter, but you know, I think that so many things go into it. Stephanie and I, and obviously, have been enjoyed the entertainment of seeing former Governor Edwards run for office here in the 6th Congressional District in Baton Rouge and the area. You know, that raises, of course, the whole image question, and who better than Edwin Edwards to make an issue in a political campaign.
Is the old image a better image than any new image? Stephanie, you've been following politics, especially in the New Orleans area, for many years. We've had plenty of scandals there, even recently. Do you think Louisiana's image has changed?
Well, has it changed? To the outside world, I would say maybe no, because something like Mayor Ray Nagin's trial and conviction happens, and there's a kind of, there's Louisiana again thing going on. But from the ground, I think it's, you know, there are different things that go into it. You know, the interesting story behind Nagin to me was that he was a reformer. His election was an attempt to get beyond this image, very much so. And that's part of the you know, tragedy of the story and the, you know, how hard people took it in New Orleans that this happened.
And we
so
had Congressman,
I feel like it's,
Congressman William Jefferson just before
Congressman
that.
William Jefferson, exactly.
And the interesting thing, Stephanie, I think is that our people don't do ordinary, tedious, white-collar sort of corruption. They do bundles of cash in the freezer sort
right.
of corruption.
Stolen granite, which
yes.
led to all sorts of jokes.
Granite countertops,
granite
for God's sake.
Granite countertops. Who knew that was a, you know, you could bribe somebody with a truckload of granite, but it turns out you can.
Well, Stephanie, you know, when you talk to people out there in the rest of the country, I mean, do they reflect on you? Do they tease you about living in Louisiana and what it's like there?
A little bit. And then you have to point out, you know, hey, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Chicago,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's maybe not so different as people like to think. I think it's, as you said, it's a little more brazen and it's a little more entertaining maybe. And you know, you have these big personalities here. But is the underlying climate really that different? I mean, I think when you look at it more closely, maybe not. I mean, look at some of these other members of Congress that have gotten in trouble in addition to ours. For corruption and for sex scandals. You know, of course, we've had our share of those.
You know, in the last 2 weeks, the mayor of Charlotte resigned because
mm-hmm.
he was found to have been taking bribes as a member of the city council.
Right, the New South, Charlotte.
Right, and members of the very powerful legislature in California have gotten in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coast to coast.
Well, but I'll point out one difference here that you hear people talking about this all the time, and I haven't done a scientific study of this, so I don't know how valid this is. But I've been back to North Carolina a number of times. I have relatives there. And a few years back, they had a Speaker of the House who got into some trouble. Then you had this Atlanta mayor issue, and they resigned.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like you don't see that often in Louisiana. When a politician gets in trouble, they don't resign right away. They fight it. Is that y'all's impression too?
It is, and it's interesting. I mean, it's one of the things that I think is going to be really interesting as we get into the governor's race is looking at David Vitter, who many people thought should have resigned after his admission of a serious sin, obviously, and that was back in 2007. And it's interesting that I hear people from the outside say, oh, people in Louisiana just don't care. I mean, I think they do care. It's that his survival was more nuanced than that. It had to do with the fact that if he had left, a Democrat probably would have taken his place because Kathleen Blanco would have appointed someone. It had to do with the fact that he's an incredibly skilled politician who had 3 years to put some distance between himself and the issue. But it's so interesting when, you know, this happened when the Anthony Weiner scandal broke in Congress and he was pretty much pushed out. And it's happening now with Vance McAllister, you know, people saying, wait a minute, why should that guy go and this guy gets to stay? So,
yeah.
You know, you're always vulnerable to that. So it's,
Well, 297-5633, that's area code 225, 297-5633. You can call in to join the conversation. What have you heard from folks out there that you know in the rest of the country about Louisiana and how we're doing, how our image is doing? Talking today about Louisiana's image, and we have in the studio Lanny Keller and Stephanie Grace, columnists for The Advocate, we just wonder, how much does it really matter, our image? Does it really matter if we have a bad image or not? Stephanie?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think even in the legislative session, you're seeing some examples of things that I think a lot of people are deciding do matter. I know you're going to get into the business environment later, but one of the things that was really striking to me about this fight over Common Core in the legislature is the extent to which the business community really held strong and the kind of business-associated Republicans really held strong against this kind of Tea Party-aligned push against Common Core, you know, this idea that it's federalization and all of that, which seemed to be a popular idea among the kind of the Tea Party wing of the party, and obviously Governor Jindal has drifted over to that position, but I think that's a real statement that this matters. The business community thinks this matters, having an educated workforce and having our workforce that can fill all these jobs that we have in this industrial boom. That was really interesting to me.
Yes. Let's hear from Bruce in Walden. Bruce, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I think you're kind of missing the point when you talk about corruption. I mean, my concern not so much with people, stealing, which is routine, but the immorality, for example, of withholding Medicaid expansion to 242,000 people simply to promote the political ambitions of the governor, where 670 people die every year because they don't have health coverage. Now, that is immorality, is corruption.
All right. Thank you, Bruce.
Well, I'd make the observation on that. And by the way, the editorial position of the Advocate is indeed that the state should accept that money. I'd make the observation on that we are hardly alone. When you talk about the uniqueness of our we talked a bit about the uniqueness of our political corruption or the lack of its uniqueness. At the same time, there are some 25 states, roughly, led by Republican leadership.
Particularly in the South.
Many in the South that have also refused the Medicaid funding.
That's right. Stephanie, do you think that our health care policy affects our image?
I do. I think it affects... it does. It's one of these things, like you mentioned, that maybe separates the South politically from the rest of the country. Even in Republican states that are swing states, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, places like that, that have Republican governors, the conversation's very different. You know, this really does seem to be a part and parcel of this national kind of anti-Obama sentiment. And I do think that makes people in other parts of the country maybe look at states like this and feel like it's just very different from other parts of the country.
I like some of those differences.
Right.
The fishing's better here.
Better here.
Yeah. I can catch fish in Louisiana. That's
sure.
a good thing.
Well,
the other interesting thing
Medicaid expansion is, the extent to which it is tied to Governor Jindal's ambitions. And that, I think, has a lot of what's happening in the state politically, and that's getting a lot of attention, really is about Governor Jindal. You know, when he goes on Fox News to defend Phil Robertson, for some of the statements he's made, when he is, kind of making speeches that are really seem designed to appeal to, the kind of rightward flank of the National Party.
Well, is Governor Jindal's image our image? And let's hang on to that thought for a minute. And we're going to hear from Darren in the LSU Lakes area. Darren, mm-hmm. Welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Yes, good morning. One of the things that I've seen most, and I travel around the country, do corporate recruiting, is that the affairs, that sort of thing, is not a major economic driver of people not wanting to come to Louisiana. It's the monetary corruption. That's the biggest thing. People really do shy away from the New Orleans area for that reason. When we've had governors that were dilly-dallying on the side, notably Edwin Edwards, I think it's pretty well known, he did some dalliances, but there was also economic concerns about what was going on with the money, and that's what drives people away. As far as people's marital status and things like that, it makes great press, but if we're looking to attract business to our communities, that is not as what the marital affairs aren't going to drive people away.
I guess if you're
many of the corporate people are doing the exact same thing.
I guess if you're looking for a place to set your business where people are not having affairs, I guess what you're saying is there's no place to go.
Precisely.
Thank
Precisely.
You.
And the people that run these corporations are not any better than any man or woman sitting in politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you do this for a living?
I do corporate recruiting for a living.
Well, great, great. Well, I hope you'll be listening into especially the second half of the show. We've got some folks from the Baton Rouge Area Chamber and Site Selection Magazine who are going to be talking with us about this very issue. Thanks,
I only listen when Jim Inkster's not on.
Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Well, Lanny, we have just a few more seconds. So what do you think? Do affairs matter?
I think that they do matter because they get you in the papers.
That's right. To journalists, they matter. The worst, right? It gives you something to write about.
The worst thing the politician wants to hear, click here for video.
I guess you're right. Well, I guess you'd have to excuse our journalists for finding some interest in the affairs of politicians. We'll be right back after this break with the Jim Inkster Show. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. This is Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. I have the pleasure of sitting in as a guest host for Jim today, and our topic is Louisiana's image. How are we looking to the rest of the country? You can join the conversation. Call 297-5633 in the Baton Rouge area, 297-5633, or the toll-free number 1-877-217-5733. Now, in just a little while, we're going to talk to our economic developers at the Baton Rouge Area Chamber and also hear from Site Selection Magazine editor Mark Aaron. He'll be calling in to talk about whether we look like a desirable state to the rest of the country. But we still have in the studio Lanny Keller and with the advocate and editorial writer who for many years has been imparting his wisdom on the editorial page, often without the name on it. That's the way editorials work, don't they?
So we don't. It's a splendid tradition, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I guess we know it's you writing it if it's a really brilliant editorial. Is that right?
That's exactly. I tell that to people all the time.
And Stephanie Grace, a columnist with The Advocate, who is based in New Orleans but does a lot of observation of things going on in the Baton Rouge area and around the state. And I guess my question at this point is Bobby Jindal's image synonymous with Louisiana's image? Has he, you know, he more than probably any other governor that I have heard of or seen, except for me since Huey Long, has sort of made an impression on the rest of the nation or has been out there rallying, you know, for the state. And of course, some people would say that's his political ambitions that are part of that. But is Jindal's image the same as Louisiana's image? And Stephanie, you want to go first on that?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a part of it because, he was elected. He was elected twice. So he does, he does reflect on the state, certainly. We also have some other very high-profile people out there speaking for the state. Mary Lander, of course, has a huge platform now as a Senate candidate in an important race and also as chair of the Energy Committee. David Vitter, Mitch Landrieu gets a lot of national press. So not only, I'd say Vance McAllister now is all over TV.
I think it's part of this, and you talk about Mitch Landrieu in New Orleans. I mean, he was someone who sort of walked into the job as a person who already was familiar with the bright lights of media attention. He was accustomed to, walking the halls of Washington, given his past experience as lieutenant governor and also dealing with his sister. So he was sort of acclimated to a sort of high national profile position that he took as mayor of New Orleans. And what's your impression, Stephanie, of how he's coming across? And does he just represent New Orleans or does he really represent Louisiana?
I think he does represent Louisiana. I think maybe people outside the state aren't as aware of some of the divisions within the state, the cultural divisions and political divisions. But he does have this history of representing the whole state as lieutenant governor. He has this sister who's a statewide senator. And he, I think most people, whether they like him or not, think he's been a really terrific ambassador for the state. He does beautifully when he does these national TV interviews. He's a real booster, but, he comes off as very sincere and knowledgeable. And I think that's most people would think that's a plus.
I would suspect, too, that we may be kind of tired of hearing this said, but there is a Katrina effect, which still benefits the mayor of New Orleans as someone who is speaking up on behalf of a city that America is still rooting for, I think.
Exactly. And now with what's happened with Sandy and disasters in some other places, with both the business community, GNO Inc., and also the state and the city, you know, we were the canary in the coal mine, as Mayor Landrieu likes to say, and I think it's true. So, you know, we have this expertise. You see some of the stories coming out of New York and New Jersey about, you know, federal housing assistance and trying to get the recovery going, and they're so painful because they're so familiar. But, you know, our people have been through it and have a lot of wisdom to share, and they're doing that.
Now, but the whole premise of this show is that people are not admiring our wisdom. They're they're denouncing our corruption. But
Can't they do both?
And back to one of my favorite topics, Governor Jindal. We tend to think of the governor as being, because we've had such high-profile kind of figures, we tend to think of the governor as setting the tone of the image. But you know, the governor was came in near the end of the latest Fox News poll of presidential contenders at 2%. The liberal journalist Paul Waldman wrote that, and then there's Bobby Jindal at 2% with room to move, a rather snarky observation, I thought, because he didn't say which direction he would move. Mm-hmm. Does that represent any kind of devaluation of the notion that our image is important?
Well, you know, when Governor Jindal, you know, first started out on his big public image campaign for Louisiana, there was a lot of emphasis in the early years of his administration that about Louisiana, you know, about what a great place it is. And he still has a lot of those elements in his talks. But, and I don't know if you've seen this, but it seems to me he sort of gravitated more and more toward his own story. And trying to build a narrative about who he is and his family, and trying to mold himself a little bit more for the presidential office, and more emphasis on that than on the state itself. Have either of you noticed that type of change in his message as he's out there?
Absolutely, and I think it's really interesting. You know, some of these big speeches in New Hampshire at the Gridiron Club in Washington last year, I don't know if you remember this, he had some great jokes, but a lot of them were about his Indian heritage, which is something you would never hear him joke about here in Louisiana. And I think it is, you know, if you are looking at the national stage, you know, the idea, one of the big problems the Republicans have is that they are so white. And, you know, whereas he really downplayed his heritage here in Louisiana when he was running, I think his handlers probably see it as an advantage, something that sets him apart. So he's talking about it more.
It's probably not as relevant to people here. You know, it seemed like when the pundits were looking at it, his heritage was an issue when he first came on the political scene. But I think as he's held office, and as he's acted as governor, and as he's pushed policies and made more and more speeches, he just becomes, you know, Governor Jindal.
This was really early. You know, it's the stage when people are getting to know you, which
right.
we went through here 10 years ago with Governor Jindal.
Yeah, that's 297-5633. That's area code 225, 297-5633. You can call in to join the conversation. How do you think Bobby's doing, Lanny, as far as, is there anything he's doing in running the state that you think is helping or hurting the state?
Well, I suspect that you're going to see over the course of we're at the midpoint of the legislative session. This is his last general session as governor, because next year is going to be a fiscal session and an election year. You're going to see in the next few weeks, by necessity, he is going to have to become more involved in the legislative debates. And the budget is in a parlous state, as it has been since the 2008 recession and the governor's ill-advised tax cuts at that time. And so, you know, the governor by nature, I think, nature of his actual day-to-day job is going to demand some attention to Louisiana issues. So we're going to see him perhaps speak out a little bit.
Well, Stephanie, what do you think should change in Louisiana to improve our image? If you could change something, of course, you're a journalist. You can help change it, I guess, and the mm-hmm. way things are spinning. But what would you do to change Louisiana to improve our image?
Well, this is actually maybe a little bit connected to the governor's focus on himself rather than the state story or the shift in that direction anyway. all these indicators, you know, they're still bad. The poverty, the health indicators, the, you know, I think, and it's hard when somebody goes out there in the country and says, you know, look at the job I did in Louisiana, I should run the country, and people start to, you know, point out all the lists where Louisiana is still at the bottom. Now, the governor likes to talk about the lists where we've moved way up, like ethics, things like that, and those do matter, but I would like to see us focus more on some of these indicators that really look at how people are doing.
And I think
that
the governor's,
get back to the Medicaid issue.
Yeah, I think the governor's narrative is that he's bringing in all this economic development, and there has been an extraordinary number of announcements coming in. So I think his narrative is to try to say, look, we're doing really well, you know, low unemployment, a lot of job growth. Isn't that really the story that people should be listening to?
I might throw in there that when I make that observation to people in national politics, they remind me that when Bill Clinton ran for president, Arkansas was hardly a garden spot in the view of the rest of the country. And so the same lack of interest in Louisiana may be evidenced should the governor become a serious national candidate.
Okay. And I think you do, exactly as Lanny said, I think you have to acknowledge how superficial presidential campaigns can be and coverage of them, you know, how often there isn't a good hard look at what has happened in that person's state. Yes.
Well, Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
And we're going to move on now to the next segment of our show. We talk about economic development. Lanny, I'd like you to stay in the studio to talk about this. But let's first take a call from Wade at Louis Cafe. Wade, you're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call.
First of all, Wade, what are you eating at Louis?
I am jealous indeed. I can tell you already.
Combo. Number one combo special. It's just absolutely phenomenal.
Okay. Let's make sure we get some advertising dollars from Louis for that. What's your question?
My question is, listening to the statements, my feeling is, and I wonder what y'all think about this, is that the impressions and the scandals are really at their core a reflection of the really bad indicators that Louisiana has had for the last, many decades, completely through the Edwards administration and everyone else. You know, we're at the bottom of all the good lists and the top of all the bad lists. But I think at its core, the image and all the scandals and things that occur are really a reflection of that. And all that grows from these bad, bad indicators in one way or another. And I just wonder what you thought about that.
Well, thanks a lot for the comment. Lanny, you want to take a shot?
Well, Wade, I certainly can't argue with that notion, but one can only wonder how much, when you're apportioning, what is the old saying that whatever hits the fan is never distributed evenly? When you're apportioning the blame in a situation as heated as a presidential campaign can get, people may say this is a root cause and that was not, or that was the governor's fault. The governor has cut a lot of ribbons at plants that has been on his watch, but how much did he really have to do with that compared to the price of natural gas? So there are different arguments that come into play on that.
Well, I want to welcome to the studio Ian Vasey, the Executive Director for Business Development for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Ian, thanks for joining us.
Morning, Robert.
Yeah, and we have on the line Mark Aaron, who's the editor of Site Selection Magazine. Now, this is a Conway-based publication, part of a whole company called Conway Data that tracks major moves of business and industry and real estate all across the United States. It'd be great to hear from someone outside the state on this issue. Mark, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Thanks very much.
Great. Well, 297-5633 if you want to join the conversation. Ian, you've been watching Baton Rouge area economic development for many years. How is our image doing?
It's doing very well, actually, like the rest of the state. I lead a team of folks that are out on a national level, even international level, working with companies trying to do business recruitment, as well as our folks that are doing business retention and expansion here. But on the business recruitment side, we've had a number of successes, amount of new investment that's come into the region, and all across South Louisiana has been unprecedented. I mean, I talked to a guy who'd been in the construction business since the early 1960s, and he said that he hasn't seen this level of activity or this level of investment since he started in the business. So if you think about it, you know, the evidence is there that we're making great strides. Unemployment is very low in the capital region, sub 5%, so that's a very good thing. And, you know, when we hear from people, when we go out and talk to these companies, I mean, we hear the same consistent things, but it's a different time than it was a number of years ago.
Well, I'd like to hear some of the same perspective from you, Mark, about what you think. But why don't you first tell us just a little bit about what it is you do so people, our listeners, really understand what it is you're up to up in Atlanta.
Sure. I'm editor of Site Selection Magazine, which for the past 6 decades has been covering and writing about corporate relocation and new facility and expansion projects globally. So I've been with the publication now for 17 years, so I've had the opportunity to kind of at a higher level observe state economic development trends, and including Louisiana.
That's right. I've been following economic development for almost 25 years in the Southeast, and Site Selection Magazine is one of those go-to places to sort of get an objective view of what's going on. All right, so give us the lowdown on Louisiana, and don't pull any punches.
Well, I would certainly point to how well the state is doing according to several of our rankings, primarily in the areas of state competitiveness and also the state business climate. A number of years ago, Louisiana did not rank well in those categories, and it has been improving pretty consistently now for the past several years. A number of years ago, I know the Louisiana and some other states dealt with ethics perceptions, and you really don't want to try to do business there, and we really hear less and less of that all the time. Louisiana is considered to be a very well-run state, increasingly pro-business. And I think this is being demonstrated by, as Ian said earlier, the number of new projects that are coming to Louisiana that might not have in the past.
Is there a sense that there's a different political culture that's taken hold that makes this happen?
There is. I think under the leadership of Governor Jindal and certainly Secretary Moray, Louisiana is perceived as being much more friendly to business. These leaders can speak to business in their own language. They believe they came from the business world, and they know what it takes for businesses to be successful. And I think they've worked hard to put in place measures that will help companies expand in Louisiana.
Well, where do we need room for improvement, Mark? We those of us in Louisiana could possibly believe we could be this great.
Well, it's hard for me to speak to some of the local issues. I'm sure around the state there are areas where things like education could be improved. There may be local business climate issues that still need to be addressed. That may well be going on. I guess I'm better able to address some of the higher level issues that we're seeing.
That's right. Well, we've got Ian Vasey with the Baton Rouge Area Chamber and Mark Aaron with Site Selection Magazine, Lanny Keller, a columnist for The Advocate, still in the studio. We'll be back after this short break with more about Louisiana's image on The Jim Inkster Show. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. This is Robert Travis Scott, president of the Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana. I'm sitting in for Jim today, And we're talking about Louisiana's image, the image of our fair state, and how we're doing on economic development, how the world sees us, how the business world sees us. And here in our studio, we have Ian Vasey with the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, and online from Atlanta, we have Mark Aaron with the Site Selection Magazine, who's been watching these trends nationwide. You can join the conversation at 297-5633 in the Baton Rouge area. That's 225-297-5633 and toll-free at 877-217-5757. We have a caller from North Foster. Charles, you are on the Jim Inkster Show.
Good morning, Robert, and good morning to you guests. I've been listening to your panel discussion, and I have to say, it does sound like Alice is in Wonderland, but I see a different picture.
Please.
Questions. How many of these companies, corporations, have relocated to Louisiana without major tax concessions? And I heard someone say the governor's from the private sector, but that must be from a previous life. Every job I've known him to have, is he's either been appointed to or been elected to, so I don't know what private sector experience the gentleman was referring to. And the last question is, what's good for business doesn't seem to be good for workers in Louisiana, as the legislature refuses to do anything to raise the minimum wage. So it seems like it may be pro-business, but it's not pro-worker or pro-family. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Charles. I appreciate your questions. Ian?
Happy to take that one.
Sure.
You know, if you think about it, incentives are part of normal business practice, and really when you boil them down, they're not a huge part of any deal. Other things like workforce, labor costs, cost of facilities, cost of operation, geography, all of those things factor into it. And so when you really get down to it, incentives are kind of a headline-grabbing thing, but really when you get down to them, they're a very minor part of the business. And you may read some of these big numbers out there, but the reality is it's generally performance-based. The company has to come in, make significant investments to achieve those rebates or things like that. And the way that incentives have been done, I could see, you know, 20-something years ago, incentive packages were just thrown out there. It was kind of nationwide. It was kind of one of those things that weren't done with any kind of scientific methodology. But really now, once we get down to an incentive request on the state level, local level, various places, we have very sophisticated economic modeling. We know what a deal is worth and what a deal isn't worth, and when to put money into deals, when a company, what they're going to really make back on a deal or not. So you know what the value is. You go into these negotiations with, you know, kind of an expectation, and many times you can't give the companies everything. You don't want to do that, and there comes a point where a deal's not worth it anymore, so you pass on those. And the deals you pass on, you don't hear about those kind of things.
Well, let's ask Mark with Site Selection Magazine about that same issue. How important are incentives, Mark?
I would agree with with Ian in projects that we look at. If they come into the discussion, it's typically maybe at the very end of the negotiation process. Many times, as Ian said, states, you know, will decide that those are not projects that, in fact, they want to go after if those incentives packages are inappropriate. But in many cases, they don't come up at all. They generally are not among even the top, you know, 5, 7, or 8 criteria that companies are looking at.
And the top 5, 7, or 8 criteria are what in general?
Oh, they would be things like availability of the appropriate workforce. Is there a good supply of skilled labor, depending on the sector? It would have to do with land costs, with the tax structure. It would have to do with infrastructure. Companies might need quick access to ports or highways or airports.
And how does Louisiana do on some of those? Obviously, we have, you know, good port facilities, but how do we do on tax structure and labor force?
Well, I could speak probably more to labor force. Certainly, companies appear to be finding the labor supply they're looking for. IBM is about to, or has broken ground on an 800-job technology center in Baton Rouge. There's an aerospace company that is opening in Lake Charles, a 750-job MRO facility. And those are just two of many that involve hundreds and hundreds of workers. So they seem to be finding the labor supply they need. I would also point to Louisiana's Fast Start worker training program as being one of the one of the better ones in terms
of. That's basically a program where if you come in as a business, the state will help train people in a timely manner to get them on the job. Right?
Like that's right. Companies that design, we've spoken to have almost always pointed to Fast Start as being very helpful in their being successful.
And that was idea was borrowed from Georgia, right?
Didn't they have that's correct. Thing? It's called Quick Start here.
Okay.
And of course, some of the best ideas are stolen, and you've got to give both the governor and Secretary Moore a great deal of credit for going to Atlanta, recruiting some people who knew how to do this, who were doing the best job of it, and putting it to work here.
That's right. We stole the Quick Starts guy and brought him down here to run Fast Start.
Jeff's doing wonderful things.
Jeff, what's his name?
Jeff Lynn.
Jeff Lynn.
Okay. All right. Oh, what do you think, Ian?
You get into things like you talk about the tax structure. Tax Foundation, KPMG, both rank Louisiana very high. I mean, we've made great steps in the rankings there. There's not really a blanket answer to it because you would really run an analysis based on which type of every company's different. You know, if it's an office user, if it's an industrial user, those kind of things.
And in
like
Louisiana,
that.
There's so many different exemptions that it would really depend on the type of business you are to try to figure out whether Louisiana is an advantageous state for you to come
right.
in on a
so,
tax front.
And even within the same sector, the same company might have, different companies might have different impacts based on the type of jobs once you get down to industrial classifications on jobs. So, you know, if you're doing, you know, just kind of like desktop publishing, it's one thing, but if you're doing computer programming, it's something else. So this goes back to my earlier comment about that you really need to take a comprehensive look, an in-depth look at every aspect of the business and figure out some places you know we're the best place for a lot of things, but certain things we might not be, and that's we just have to be very sophisticated in our analysis of the company requests.
297-5633. That's 225-297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation. Ian and Mark, it seems to me that a lot of the development we've seen in South Louisiana, all these announcements, a lot of it is driven by the oil and gas industry, and especially the fracking that has come to be to bring more gas resources to the market at an affordable cost. And this has led to a lot of development. I mean, how much of this development in South Louisiana might have happened almost no matter what our incentives or our environment was? And Mark, if you could take a shot at that question first.
That's very hard for me to quantify. Probably a fair amount would have, but certainly the fact that Louisiana has become so much more business friendly and competitive, I would have to think that a lot of that investment that might have gone elsewhere to other Gulf Coast states has in fact come to Louisiana.
Mark, I don't know. I don't know if y'all perceive that, but certainly I've gotten a lot of feedback from my friends in more of the corporate world that Governor Jindal is very presentable in these terms and comes off as more a McKinsey and Company consultant they might hire and speaks their language in a way that perhaps a traditional politician does not.
You're listening to the Jim Inkster Show. I'm Robert Travis Scott, sitting in for Jim. In the studio, we have Ian Vasey, Executive Director for Business Development for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, and Lanny Keller, editorial writer for The Advocate, and Mark Aaron, the editor of Site Selection magazine in Atlanta, calling in to give us his pearls of wisdom about how Louisiana is shaping up on the national industrial scene. Ian, what about education? You know, I usually hear from people from outside the state when they're talking about wherever they're going to move,
right,
is that they're going to have employees, and the employees are going to want to know whether the schools are good. How are we faring on that front?
We get asked almost every presentation we make to a company out of state anywhere is a variation on two questions. The first being is, if we move here, where will our employees put their kids in school? I mean, that's a major concern.
And that's a very complicated question.
It's a nuanced answer.
Because there's so many choices.
Right.
How do you explain all that?
It's a very nuanced answer. There's not one thing that you can just say. I mean, we talk a lot about there's some great choices for magnet schools and some great public schools in the area. In fact, 5 of the top 10 state public schools in the state of Louisiana are in the capital region here. And then you get into, some of the private school choices and things like that. And you talk about the progress that we're making. And, you know, we do recognize that there's aspects of our educational system that haven't worked. And we're taking steps to try and address those. And then the second part of the question that we get is, you know, what kind of worker is the educational system collectively turning out? So what kind of employees will I get as a result of this? You know, that's a thing that we're moving forward on. So it's not just a straightforward answer. There's, like anything else, you have to kind of give data, and you have to work on the solutions that are some of the challenges we're facing.
Do you think it's any more complicated explaining our educational system here than it is anywhere else? And Mark in Atlanta, how important is the local educational scene for site selection of companies?
Oh, it varies. Robert, it really depends on what a company is looking for in terms of its workers. Is it looking for a future workforce that will be strong in STEM curricula, or is it looking for for something else? So it really depends on the kind of company we're talking about and the kind of workforce it will require down the road.
Yeah,
Mr. Aaron, do you see the drastic cutbacks in higher education under the Jindal years as being a long-term negative in that?
That's our editorialist pitching that question to you. Go right ahead, Mark. Do you have any view on that?
You know, I've not studied those cuts or specifically where they are, so it's hard for me to comment on that.
Well, Mark, the other aspect of the question really is people want to move their employees or go to a place and hire employees, but they're going to want to know how the school systems are as well for the children of the employees, not just what the education system is doing in terms of preparing people for that workforce. What do you make of the need for states and local communities to do a good job offering quality education for employees of prospective expanding companies?
The extent to which communities can offer options, I think, is very important. If a company coming into a community is locked into one type of education, be it public, for example, and that's not doing well, that could be a negative in terms of where that company goes. If a community can offer options, private schools, charter schools, and so forth, and most large communities can, then that is to their advantage.
Well, we have no shortage of options here, if that's the case. But they're hard to sort out, I think. We have seen a lot of development occurring in New Orleans and in the Baton Rouge area and some in Lafayette for software companies,
yeah,
and in Shreveport as well. And there seems to be a demand for workers in this field. And I wonder if, Ian, if you could talk a little bit about what that demand is, and are we going to be able to fill that demand?
You know, I think this thing started a number of years ago with the state digital media tax credits, which kind of got us on the map, and it's a very powerful tool to be able to start to build an emerging industry such as this. We start out with a couple of the entry level deals, but they were larger than that, EA Sports and things. But IBM landing and paying attention, I think they started looking at about 15, 16 states when they started the process, and ended up selecting Baton Rouge in Louisiana, and that was very much about the partnership with LSU, and LSU really stepped up with that, and the LED guys, Louisiana Economic Development, really put Help put resources in place that will train that workforce. And
so you think we'll be able to fill those 800 jobs?
You know, I think we will, and I think it's not just going to be a one university solution. I think it's going to have to include Southern, it's going to have to include Southeastern, it's going to have to include all of the universities across the state. And then if you see, I mean, there was a deal recently announced, ESC up in Shreveport Monroe, I think it was. That was really, you know, kind of an indication that these companies are starting to pay attention to what's going on. I had dinner with some folks from California a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things they were operating in that field, and one of the things they said is you know, there's that much competition in California, Northern California, for these type of entry level folks, computer programmers. I mean, they have specific, you know, job type that they're looking to hire, and they're telling me that it's in the Bay Area, San Jose. They're looking they have to pay people $150,000, $200,000 to get that, and that's not a cost effective model. So if they can pick up those same folks, same level of folks for, you know, $75,000 to $100,000 range, they're actually able to compete more effectively. And again, what that does is that puts us in competition against the overseas companies.
We're going to go to Flanagan in Southdown.
Yes,
Flanagan, welcome to the Jim Inkster Show.
Thank you. I'm an organic farmer, and I'm really concerned that Louisiana doesn't diversify its agricultural base and grow all the things that drought-stricken California is growing. The other thing is this governor of ours has never had a day job. And you didn't answer the guy's question when he alluded to that a few minutes ago. I think it was Daniel. But at any rate, we could do so much more. And I've lost my train of thought. But basically, criminal justice reform is never on the table. And the United States has 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. And Louisiana has the highest incarceration rate on the planet. And if you got these guys out into local alternatives, community alternatives to incarceration, and put them to work, you have suddenly so many people entering the workforce that are qualified and have done
their
time.
Flanagan. I appreciate it. We got a roll, and that's a great comment, and indeed that is an issue that we need to think about. I want to thank our guest here today, Ian Vasey, Executive Director of Business Development for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Thanks for joining us and lending your insights. Mark Aaron, editor of Site Selection Magazine of Atlanta. Good luck with the work that you're doing, and we really appreciate you calling in with your insights about our state and how we're seeing. Lanny Keller, as always, thanks for joining us. Hope you'll be back on the Inkster Show again soon with your pearls of wisdom and your critical thinking. And join us again next time. This is Robert Travis Scott sitting in as guest for Jim Inkster. He'll be back again on the show soon. Good morning.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent.